Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. Oh my God. Could it be that we've had two in a row in 1 week? Oh my God. I must be getting organized. Or the Vodafone Comedy Festival may be going on in Dublin and I managed to get some people that were heading over. I myself am still in New York. The festival starts tonight. And my next guest, Colin Quinn, is now in Ireland, but I managed to talk to him last week, immediately after I talked to Mark Normand at the Comedy Cellar. Before Colin had a show, he does these shows on a Wednesday in the Fat Black Pussycat, which is part of the Comedy Cellar comedy complex. They're running three venues nowadays. Anyway, I was very excited to chat to Colin because... I've been a fan of Colin Quinn since I was a young boy. I mean, you guys, most of our listeners wouldn't be aware of the show Remote Control. It was like, to be honest, you wouldn't have thought it at the time because you weren't paying attention. But when you look back, it was kind of like the first of the silly, irreverent comedy game shows. Nothing like it had been done at the time. And a guy hosted it called Ken Ober. And Colin was like the sort of side guy, like the announcer guy, but he just used to make a lot of sarcastic comments. But he was very New York and he was very didn't give a crap kind of an attitude. So I became a fan, would you believe, through that. But over the years, I've followed his career because he's kind of like one of the more famous Irish American comedians. And I went to see his show in Irish Wake on Broadway. We talk about it a bit in the chat, but it was a really interesting one man show about the Irish-American experience, and my aunt took me to see it, and it was the first time I realized that there was more to Colin Quinn than just the New York attitude and throwaway jokes. He doesn't like doing podcasts, actually, but he did this as a favor, I guess, because he was heading to Ireland, so that was nice. I've been lucky in that he seems to have a real respect for me having learned Chinese, which has possibly also helped me to get Colin to do the podcast. I mean, for the average Irish listener, you wouldn't be that excited about having Colin Quinn on the podcast, but that's only because his renowned and the sort of comedian's respect hasn't spread across the water. So this is his first trip to Ireland, and this is a quick chat we had at the Comedy Cellar. Without further ado, Colin Quinn.
Oh, God, it's gross.
And this one is multidirectional.
All right.
So, Colin Quinn.
Yes.
Well, it's a real honor, you know? I mean, you're such a nice, natural guy. So, I've never had to sort of, you know, be awkward around you. But you're one of the comedians I've known and admired the longest of all the people I've encountered in my comedy journey.
Well, I would hope so. Let's face it. If an Irish guy from Queens doesn't like me, I'm really finished.
I mean, I really am in your demographic.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
without you, I've got nothing.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, what have you done with all the others?
What do you mean?
The Italians and all them.
I dismiss them all.
Yeah, the problem with us is we have to grow up around, and that's what I say in Ireland. Yeah. I say, you guys have it easy. You're all pale and awkward.
Right.
But you were surrounded by other pale and awkward people. We were surrounded by confident...
Italian, black, everybody's got their little game, Puerto Rican, yeah.
Yeah, and they fucking hitting puberty at
11, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm waiting for pubic hair at 14.
Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, it was harder for us.
It was harder for us.
Yeah, so anyway... thank you for doing the podcast. You're going to Ireland.
Yes, I am.
Which, I mean, I met you many years ago. I don't think you remember it.
No,
Ars Nova. You have no recollection. But even back then, I remember you saying, I'd love to perform in Ireland.
Yeah.
How did it take this long?
It's really insane. I don't know. Because my whole goal was to perform in Ireland. And I don't know what happened over the years, but it just became like this thing where I was not performing, you know?
I was waiting for one of the bartenders or managers to come back.
Oh, sure, no problem. Take your time. Yeah, it's just been this weird, weird thing. And like I think I told you, I even wrote my show. My first of the one-man shows was Long Story Short. It's about the history of the world. Because I said, everyone does Ireland, England, Europe. I've never done it. This is ridiculous. Every middle in the country had been over there by then. And I was never there, like Scandinavia. I said, that's it. I'm writing a show that's about the world. This way, for sure, I'll be there. Just didn't get booked.
Really?
Very strange.
Long Story Short didn't get booked?
No.
Because I want to talk about that. But you say that was your first one-man show. But I
well, not my first, right.
Because I saw An Irish Wake on Broadway.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, my aunt took me. Now, I was a fan anyway, because I mean, I remembered you from Remote Control. Right, I mean, we don't have to go through like your whole thing.
Right, right.
As a kid, I watched you on Remote Control, which is embarrassing to you. I mean,
I'm fine with it. I don't care. Yeah.
Yeah. And you had the distinct voice, and you were kind of like.
I smoked on TV.
Yeah, you smoked on TV, and you were very like, not the. You weren't Ed McMahon anyway.
No, exactly. You know, I was very sarcastic.
You weren't going like, Alex Trebek.
I was like the anti-whatever.
Yeah, anti-whatever. That
announcer.
Announcer guy.
Yeah.
And I had an obsession with Kari Rohr.
Oh, well, many people did. And you said you had a poster.
Yes, I had a poster. But MTV was, it was different. I mean, it was the epicenter of our lives.
Yes, it was. It was a whole different MTV.
And Remote Control was one of the first, like, non-video.
It was the first, yeah.
It was the first. Yeah. So that was, like, a huge thing.
It was.
And if you asked me right now to tell you what the game was, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Yeah, well, the game was just basically, now it sounds like a lot of shows do it, but back then nobody did, like, all the questions about the Brady Bunch. It was all about pop culture in the 70s and 80s. Thing.
Sorry, I'm only just checking to make sure that we're recording.
So it was all, like, 80s and 70s pop culture. So there was literally a channel on the Brady Bunch. It wasn't just questions. They had their own channel. And so it was a very pop culture thing, but mostly the more juvenile, the better. But it was everything. It was kind of a comment on the fact that we grew up watching all this nonsense and how we had it all in our heads. So it was kind of a brilliant idea.
Yeah, and
at the time, I didn't appreciate it. Yeah,
but then myself and my brothers plugged into you because we knew that you were like Irish American.
Right.
And then I remember like one of the very first times I went to the Comedy Cellar. I can't remember if I just started doing comedy for perhaps even before. Although it was probably after because I started doing comedy when I was 21. But anyway, you walked on. I was like, holy shit. It's the guy from Remote Control. You know? So it's like.
Right.
So I think you might be like the person I've known longer than anybody else in terms of an awareness of what
right.
that I have met.
Sure.
Because I met Chris Rock, but I was definitely aware of you before Chris Rock.
Right.
I mean, you must fucking resent that bastard fucking rising up so fast.
No, Chris, we started the same day almost.
Oh, yeah, I'm only kidding, of course. Yeah. Oh, you really? You guys started the same time?
Yeah, we started together.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you have a lot
I know him for 30, 32
You have
years.
A lot of like high-profile contemporaries.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so that's why I was very excited when my aunt said, do you want to come and see An Irish Wake?
Right.
Because for us, that was the...
Yes.
A great Irish American show.
Yeah.
Now, what happened? Because there was a huge gap between An Irish Wake and then those types of shows.
I don't know. I mean, what happened was I went back to stand-up. I don't know what I was. I mean, The Irish Wake, I should have kept running it. It was when I closed it, they go, the box office guy, because I was going back to SNL, which I should have just kept doing the show. The box office guys go to me. They were like these Irish guys from that neighborhood. And they go, you're nuts. And I go, what do you mean? They go, this is every show's dream. They go, no show. This is the idea they have for every show where people leave and we sell more tickets on word of mouth after your show when it lets out. They go, you're crazy closing the show. But I didn't understand Broadway. I didn't understand that was such a big deal at the time.
Yeah, and that it was a license to print money.
Right, and that it was just such a
And the longer it runs, the better.
Yes. I could have took it on the road. I could have gone to Ireland with The Irish Wake.
No, because it was a great Irish American story.
Yeah,
and I always remember the line of we didn't talk about feeling. Somebody started talking about their emotions. We told them to walk around the block. When they came back, they were talking about sports.
Something
like that.
Yeah, right.
It was a great show though. But it's funny because you say you went back doing stand up, but why is that not stand up?
It is stand up.
That's what I don't.
It
understand.
Is stand up.
In America, there's always this classification.
I know it infuriates me.
If you're telling stories, that's not stand up.
Right. No, it infuriates me. Then people say that. Yeah. When they go, well, you're doing stand-up again. I was like, that is all my shows to stand-up. But yeah.
I feel like you flourish in that space.
I like that space better. Because stand-up for me is fine. But I mean, I like doing, I like doing things with...
Well, because you get more... Because I love gigging in the comedy. So I love the 15-minute spots.
Me too.
You don't have time to develop certain types, certain types of things
that Irish people enjoy, which is thoughts, like bigger thoughts. It's more of a thought thing. You know what I mean? Like that you can't develop.
Or create an atmosphere of the story and then get to the punchlines a little bit later.
Right.
I mean, I can tell you this is the first time I've done a podcast where we're actually getting like served.
I know.
The really high level. Things are really getting fancy in my life right now.
Yeah.
Listen to the cans opening.
I know.
It's almost like I have a producer that's doing sound effects. Yeah. So, you know, I would be curious about how the Irish would respond to an Irish wake. Because the Irish, you know the Irish are funny about Irish America, right?
Yeah, sure.
No, it's like a mixed thing.
Yeah. It is a mixed thing. It's, we just love them, and they have very mixed feelings about us.
Yeah, what's your awareness of the...
Well, I mean, the plastic patties and... You know, that's what they call plastic patty, and, you know, they don't like, you know, I can imagine a bunch of people going over there going, hey, you know, and, you know.
My great-great-grandfather and all
right,
that.
Right, mean, all that stuff.
Those are the stereotypical jokes.
Yes.
But I mean, I think there's a respect for a certain type of Irish-American, but there is also that inclination to dismiss it.
Yes, I mean, to dismiss the as a group, but I think they like that, they like seeing, like, Irish people, successful Irish people, despite the, you know, the stereotype that every group has, which is they hate to see their own do well. Every group says that about themselves, by
that's
the way.
That's right, yeah. Every group has tall poppies.
every group goes, oh, yeah, we hate to see ourselves rise up. But it's, I think Irish people do like seeing Irish. I know I like seeing Irish. Like, look, Conor McGregor. I love Conor McGregor. Yeah. Because he's Irish.
Yeah, right, yeah, that's part of it.
That's all of it. What's the other part, that he's white?
I wasn't suggesting that, but it seems to be becoming a discussion. Okay. No, not our discussion. The discussion in the media seems to have turned that way.
Oh, really? You noticed racial?
That? Well, yeah, it's getting racial.
But that's because he's using an Irish expression when he says, "That's for me, boy." Like they don't understand. Irish people say "boy" to everybody.
That was unfortunate.
But yeah, but everyone, so they say "boy." They call everybody "boy."
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody
yeah.
brings that up because they like the drama. Instead of going, "No, that's like an Irish thing." Like, "Hey, pal." They call
absolutely.
Each other.
I mean, it's dismissive, but not in a racial
way. No, it's what they say everybody call. Hey, what's my boy? Yeah. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like dismissive rather
yes,
than
exactly.
anything to do with.
No, it's nothing racial.
Like, I don't give a fuck about
it. But nobody
it.
Wants to say that, even though it's true.
Yeah, so. But I mean, on another level, it's not something you have to think about when you're going to Ireland. Because, I mean, your act doesn't rely on that whole Irish thing. Especially nowadays.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter for going over there. But I think it's just interesting in terms of. I mean, I was 14 when I went there, but
I know.
I was shocked.
You were
how non-accepting they were of us as a tribe.
Really, Yank.
You know what
they call
mean?
You, Yank.
Yank was my nickname. Teachers called me Yank, but I'm not. But that's not a joke. That's
I believe
a, that's
it.
Actually not a punchline.
I believe
the teachers call me Yank.
Well, it should be a punchline. It's hilarious.
Well, Father Butler used to tell me, Yank, one of these days that big mouth is going to get you in trouble. So I opened my first stand-up special with a story about him. But anyway, yeah, they call me Yank.
Yeah. And did they test you out, make you fight and everything?
Nah. Honestly, they were more intrigued than anything. So it wasn't a being an
American. It's like Irish people over here. We love Irish people's accents over here.
Yeah, I mean, being an American wasn't a disadvantage. But
right.
The thing that surprised me was their lack of accepting that I was Irish.
Right, no, we're not considered Irish,
no way.
Of course. Of course.
Like, and I always find that weird when sometimes in a crowd, I'll say, any Irish people here?
Right.
And like, a good 30 people will be like, woo! And then I'll be like, where are you from? And they'll be like,
Chicago!
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I didn't actually mean that. So now I have to figure out how to find the actual patty.
You have to say anybody from Ireland here.
Yeah, anybody from Ireland, yeah. Which is weird.
I know. Anybody that was born in Ireland here.
Yeah, anyone actually knows Ireland.
Because even if you said from Ireland, they'd be like, way!
Yeah, and then their grandparents.
That could be funny too, though.
Yeah. So, I was a second ago, I was going to ask you something, and now it's gone out of my head. Oh, yeah. So, because you went back to SNL. Yeah, because the Irish will be very excited about the your SNL pedigree, too.
You know?
I bet you they'll be pushing the shit out of that and all the publicity.
Maybe.
Yeah, because some things are like, some things land more to the Irish in terms of like their awareness of what's in America.
Right, of course.
Like you say tough crowd, they won't get it.
But
you say,
I guess not.
You know, whereas like the American comedy fan would be like, you know, that's like, they remember that show.
Right, of course.
But it just didn't run over there. It was SNL, even though they don't really watch it.
Right, but they just know
it
exists.
As a thing.
Yeah.
So was SNL was part of the reason why you sort of didn't continue doing your
doing the Irish
shows?
Wake, yeah. But then after that, tough crowd happened. So then that got in the way till 2004, and then after that, I just started doing stand up. And I said, you know, and actually Jerry Seinfeld one day he goes to
me. I was going to ask you about that.
He goes, we have a breakfast. So we have breakfast all the time, you know. And then he goes, you should do another one of your one-man shows. He goes, if you do it, I'll produce it. If you do not, because he loved.
So that's how it happened. Because
he loved Irish Wake.
Right.
He loved Irish Wake. He went to see Irish Wake when I did it in its infancy in like 1994 in L.A. He came, 1994, he came to see it. He goes, this show's amazing. He loved Irish Wake. So he always comes to see my stuffs, you know what I mean? So when I did the other show, then he goes, all right, I'll produce it.
Yeah, because I feel like that was possibly part of how you managed. Like, that was known in Ireland that Jerry Seinfeld was producing this show.
It was.
Like, do you think it helped your to get it out there?
Oh, yes. HBO, I'd been trying to get HBO to come see me do stand-up. I had a stand-up set that I wanted to do for HBO for like 3 years. They sent like the third, fourth, fifth guy, you know.
Yeah.
Then the minute I was in the show, we didn't even invite them, and they came.
Right.
And said, we'll do it. We didn't even ask them. They just showed up, the heads of HBO at the time. Comedy.
Just on the
just because celebrity Jerry, endorsement. Yeah. Yes. So yeah, I'd say it had everything to do with it, you know.
Well, lucky you.
Yeah.
But he produced the second one too then.
No, second one was unconstitutional. I did that.
Oh, right.
I did that. I filmed that with New Wave. And then Netflix bought that as a, you know, an acquisition, whatever they call it.
So when
which
you
means
did
I don't get paid.
When you did the History of the World thing, what was that called?
New Wave gets paid. I wonder if they paid New Wave. History of the World? That was called Long Story Short.
Long Story Short. When you did that, was that just like, you were like, fuck it, I'm going to write a history thing? Because like Irish Wake was kind of personal.
Yes. And then I want to do the world. Because I'm always interested in like, what's the problem with the world? You know what I mean? Like, what's the fucking problem with the world? I'm always interested in that.
Yeah.
Like everything it's one of those things that just gets you. Where like, how could it just be like this? How could it just be like this? How could it keep being like the same behavior? And, you know what I mean?
And did you feel restricted by the necessity to do jokes?
Not restricted, because I feel like jokes are what makes me worth listening to.
Yes.
Like, I feel like if I don't have jokes, then you listen to another half-assed, half-intelligent philosopher who thinks he knows more than he does.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I have my jokes, you're like, okay, that's why this guy's valuable, because he can actually make a joke. Yeah.
Yeah, that's important, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, it's false advertising. You know, advertise yourself as a philosopher if you want to be a philosopher.
And was there any part of that journey, like of looking at different parts of the world, that you just went, fuck, I just don't know if I can make this bit funny? I mean, I know you can just
sure.
I know you can just pick the easy ones to make funny, because you can talk about, oh, the fuck.
Yeah,
you
no, but I wanted to get everybody. Yeah, I mean, honestly, the Greeks. If I could do Greeks and Romans, I'd like to just do a whole show on Greeks and Romans.
Yeah, I think they could carry their
so
own show.
So interesting
now.
They're so interesting.
I think if you did Rome, you know, Rome is always so interesting to look at in terms of how you compare it to where we're at.
Well,
today,
we're at, yeah, of
how
course.
We repeated it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And Greece is really interesting to me, just because of the school of thought. But it's also very, it's almost, believe it or not, politically incorrect to revere Greece as, like, you can't, you know what I mean? Like, to say it's this birthplace of civilization is like, what? What are you talking about? How could you even think that way? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, what do they say? Mesopotamia? I
Mesopotamia, and Egypt, and, you know. And, just not Greece, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, they'll be knocking those statues down in no time.
Well, I mean, if you're thinking about doing another show, I mean, I would think that the fall of the Roman Empire, if you did it in a way that made it look like it was looking
like
a little like today.
Yeah, that's actually
political intrigue, the Senate.
It's a great idea.
You know, I mean, just because you're good at that history thing.
That's a good idea.
Because that's my degree in college, too.
Oh, it is?
That's why I admired your goes at the history.
Oh, thanks,
stuff.
Thanks.
And the New York one, too.
Yeah, yeah, the New York one was my baby, obviously.
Now, you know. But Seinfeld produced that, too, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He directed it.
Oh, he directed it.
Came in, he
it.
Loved it. He wanted me to do that years ago, because I'm always talking about every neighborhood. And, like, I know every neighborhood in New York, and I just go around. I'm just obsessed with everything, immigration, every ethnicity. I'm obsessed with all of it, you know.
Me, too. I annoy people.
Well, what's funnier than the fact that you grew up in Flushing, and now it's more Chinese than China.
I know.
The Koreans moved out, right?
The Koreans are gone. It's just China.
That's how Chinese it is. The Koreans are too Chinese for them.
Well, it was so interesting that the New York Times went with that story. They actually...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did a story on me.
They did?
How crazy it is that this guy goes to Ireland and what brings him back to Flushing is China.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah. Like, so they did go with that angle.
They did?
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
But I'm like you. I love the ethnicities and neighborhoods.
Yes.
And, I mean, to a degree, gentrification is kind of destroying that.
Yes, but I mean, gentrification and immigration, as much as I hate to say it, they've made the city, the boroughs,
yeah,
better.
They've made
them better. But because I missed, of course, in hindsight, in the rearview mirror, I loved New York growing up because I was a little kid, but it was violent and it was psychotic and it was falling apart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, in the 70s.
It was not a joke. I mean, I knew a lot of people, a lot of bad stuff happened to, including Irish immigrants. And it was no joke, you know what I mean?
Like brutally
bad
tough
things
city.
Happened.
So you're
yeah.
a little older than me, so you were like more aware of it.
Yes.
Like I remember the Tompkins Square riots. I remember the Washington Heights riots.
Yeah.
But I was young and I felt distant from it.
Right. But I remember a
Where'd
lot.
Where'd you grow up?
Park Slope.
Oh, you actually grew up there?
Yes.
And what was the demographics of Park Slope when you were growing up?
There was Irish, there was Italian, there was Jewish, there was black, there was Puerto Rican. It was very, very mixed. Very mixed.
But it was, what would you call it, working class, middle class?
It was working and middle class, some poor. It was block to block, which a lot of the city was back then.
Right, yeah.
It was, it was very mixed. I mean, I guess it was almost like, but it was nothing like it is today, obviously.
Well, obviously now it's affluent.
But
it's beyond middle class now.
Yeah, it was very, no, of course, now it's one of the richest neighbors. But yeah, it was very mixed neighborhood.
And your people didn't own brownstones or anything, did they?
Yeah, we bought a brownstone for $11,000. They borrowed money off, my parents borrowed money off Uncle John. He was the bar owner. John Keeler, he had the bars. So everybody in the family would borrow money off him for your down payment for the house. They bought a brownstone, and then we lived, and it was $11,000. And it was like 1966. Today, that would be worth... Probably, if we had kept it, which of course we sold in the 80s, but if we had kept it, that would be worth $3 million, at least.
Easy.
At least, right. $3 million for 11,000. But yeah.
A fine return on your investment.
And my family's from Bay Ridge. My parents grew up in Bay Ridge.
Oh. Because our neighbors have Bay Ridge connections.
Yeah.
Sullivan's.
Oh, nice.
The bar, doesn't matter. There's a bar down there still that he has.
Called Sullivan's?
Tommy Sullivan. No. Ugh, I can't remember the name.
The Greenhouse? Called, I'll tell you exactly. I'll name all the bars. Penny Feathers. What's the other place? Three Musketeers.
Well, maybe it's that one. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But they were Bay Ridge Irish.
Oh, yeah. Well,
but they were off the boats.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I'm sure they know all my cousins live there, the Murphys.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, you have Murphy in you?
Yeah, well, half Murphy, half Quinn, yeah.
But they're both from the north.
No, Monaghan is my mother's family's from.
Oh.
That's sort of on the border, right?
Monaghan, they say in Ireland.
Monaghan? Is that from the border?
It's on the border. It's Ulster, but it's not in Northern Ireland.
Oh.
So it's the province of Ulster. They play in the Ulster Championship in the Gaelic.
So that's interesting. Yeah, they're from Monaghan, and then the other ones are from Belfast. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're Ulster people.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
But
so you went over there once.
Yeah, I was there only for a day.
Oh,
I was
only doing, 1 day? Or you were doing the thing?
I was there. No, I was in England doing a show. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to Belfast for a day because my family's from here. And, you know, it meant so much. Like to my father, because my grandparents are from, and I was like, it was so important to him. I was like, I'm going to go check it out. You know, he read these diaries that they had, like the family had these diaries from when they were over there, and about the Protestants marching. when I read them, you know, and one of them was like, he goes, he's sending letters to his, not diaries, but like letters to his wife, you know, and it's like, I'm back here. I forgot how much I hate when they do their march and they were hitting those drums till their wrists bleed. And I was like, oh, I could just feel the vibe, like 1921 and stuff.
So where did 1920s. You see that?
My uncle had written a letter. My father had these letters saved.
Wow.
And from his uncle, or I guess it was my granduncle, from 1921, because his father was from, you know, he had to leave, and they all worked on the docks, like, down there, you know. And but anyway, just the wrist bleed, I was like, ugh.
Wow.
But anyway, so I wanted to go over there. So then I went for the day, because I was like, I'm going to Belfast. I went for one night. I just stayed over for one night by myself, tried to get in touch with my cousins, couldn't find them. They lived somewhere in the Falls Road, but nobody called me back. I left some message at some number, you know.
Yeah.
And then I just went to, like, the local, I went to the Crown by myself, then I went to some nightclub.
Crown's lovely, though. Beautiful bar.
Yeah, and I went and got fish and chips and hung out and all night, you know, and just stayed up all night just by myself, walking around. But it's dangerous. It was, like, 1989 or 90. It was still very dangerous. Like I told you, I was walking down Falls Road, and, you know, the kids are, like, four-year-old kids, just like I saw on TV, throwing the rocks at the tanks.
Yeah.
You know, the tanks
were right in the middle of it then, yeah.
Yeah, and they're giving an evil look, you know, to everybody, like, especially me. Like, they don't know me, so they must know everybody's face. So, like, the soldiers were kind of looking like, who's this idiot? You know what I mean? Where's he from, you know?
Were you into that? Because I was into it.
Sure, like, I was.
Before, I mean, I only went to Ireland in 1990, but... First time I went up north was the Easter of 91. I went to visit my cousins in County Down. But there was a part of me that was into the fact that there were still tanks. It's terrible in a way when you think about it.
Of course it is. It's a thrill of a, yeah.
There's an excitement to it.
Of course. It's that thrill of all of violence. You know, look, violence is... There's a reason every movie has, like, mafia murder, because people get thrilled. Guys get thrilled by it, you know?
Yeah. But we grew up thinking that stuff was all right. You know, I don't know about you, but
of course.
I'm assuming that it was the same.
Yes, of course it was. Yeah.
The Irish Americans, like, I mean, yeah, when I went to Ireland, I was shocked.
My father, when he was alive, he was involved with some, because like I said, the North meant a lot to him, I guess, because his father, his mother, you know, brother from Belfast. And he went over there a couple of times and stayed at, like, one of them, maybe McCreesh or one of the Irish hunger strikers' houses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, he was involved with some organization. You know, whatever were. And he said they were
Norway.
They shot rubber bullets at them, you know.
Really?
Yeah, because they're like, oh, these Yankees coming over here trying to, you know.
Yeah, assuming it's the money.
So they were, and they were bringing them. I'm sure there was something. I'm sure there was a lot more involved than, you know. It wasn't exactly just a fact-finding mission, you know.
I did a gig once for Sinn Féin, you know. It was at an Irish language event, but the gig was in Stormont, you know, which was originally the
prison.
No. Stormont was the government.
Oh, the parliament, right.
But it
right,
was
right.
like a Protestant government, but now it's the
right.
Now it's the assembly, and it's fine. But anyway, they were having this Irish language, Irish dancing night, but they asked me to do 10 minutes because I was learning the Irish language at the time. And I walked on stage, and my opening joke was, "Hey, how you doing? I'm an Irish American comedian, but don't worry, guys, I haven't come for our money back." Thank God they left.
That's funny.
It could have went either way.
Yeah, but that's a perfect opening line.
Yeah, it could have went either way.
Yeah, kidding me. Yeah, so he was pretty deep into. Whatever that was, because of his family, you know. Like, they all had to leave.
Yeah, my mother was the exact same. Her dad was from the North. We marched with County Down. And
right.
Huge sympathies for that.
That's right.
That side of it all.
Oh, everybody. I mean, you know, it was amazing.
But then the Irish, that's another thing that is thrown back at us, the Irish Americans, is that we loved the IRA.
Of course, yeah. It's easy to, you know.
That's another way they dismiss us, is not understanding Ireland.
Which is fair enough,
yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, of course, because people glamorize that, and it's like, hey, we have to live with it, you know.
Yes, exactly, But, you know, in hindsight, you go, of course. But at the time, you think.
Yeah, but we were kids. I don't blame us. We were little kids. I was a kid when I was like 15. Yeah, I mean, you know, the parents and grandparents, yeah. But,
So, you're just going to Ireland. You're just going to do stand-up, right? You're not doing any hours or anything, right?
No, I think I'm on strip shows. Then I was talking to somebody last night. And it was like, no, you do like 10-minute sets. I was like, 10-minute sets? That's it? But, you know, whatever it is, I'll see what it is, you know.
No, it's not 10 minutes. It's 20, I think they're 20, 25-minute sets.
That's good. That's better.
You'll be able to...
At least get my teeth in a little bit.
And what day are you going?
Wednesday.
Oh, you'll have a bit of time to...
Yeah, my show's not till Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be fine.
You'll be in a tent.
I know, you said tent shows. That's funny. I don't think Irish people should be in tents, by the way.
Why?
I don't know. It's just
too feckin' wet.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound right to me.
So, you know, here's the last thing. As a, I'm from Queens.
Yes.
But I've lived in Ireland for 27 years, basically. And, you know, I come back. Like, even though I sound like a New Yorker still to people.
Yes.
Like, I feel like this is, like, no longer my city.
Right.
Like, do you, I mean, you've always
yeah,
stayed
Yeah, I feel
here.
That way, too. I mean, I feel like, I mean, obviously, it's our city. We know it is. But it's certainly not the New York that we remember.
Like, I find it hard not to be bitter walking around. Do you have that experience? Or you're
Yeah,
you're
but not because it's New York, just in general. I mean, you know,
you're just a bitter guy.
You know? But I mean, yeah, it has nothing to do with this city.
But I guess it's just frustrating because it's, you know, it's less affordable. Like, I don't mean
I know,
that,
but
like
I said,
in a sense, like, it's just not a working class city anymore.
No, it's not. Not at all. No, there's none of those people. I always tell people, if you want New York accent, you go to Suffolk County, Long Island, yeah. or Florida. That's the only places where I hear it.
I know. Well, that's interesting because I've talked to people about the death of the New York accent.
Yes.
Because people always say to me, it's like, well, you got a real New York accent. Yeah. It's like, yeah, because this is fucking New York.
Right. But the only places I see it, or like, you know, like Chester, New York, like Middletown, you'll hear New York people.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
up there or Suffolk County or Florida. That's where it is.
Yeah, I mean, you still get a bit of it in eastern Queens where I live.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, you know, places like Great Neck and Douglaston. Oh, those neighborhoods. Or, sorry, Little Neck and Douglaston.
Yes.
There's still some people left.
Sure.
But, and I'm sure you get some still in, like, Sunset Park, maybe?
No. Bay Ridge.
Bay Ridge you still
bit,
get?
Yeah, a little bit of Bay Ridge. But for the most part, no. It's changed, you know what I mean? Well, it's a, you know, most of those people have moved to the suburbs. I mean, yeah. they moved. I mean, they did move. So it's kind of like, it's not like they got forced out. They moved. And, you know, it's yeah. been happening since 1960, you know? So it's like, you can't just say they weren't gentrified out. They moved on their
yeah,
own.
Yeah, they moved, know? Yeah.
Yeah. But that was because it was so bad. This city was bad. I mean, I loved it, but I was a kid. But I also glamorized it. And it, like I said, in the rearview mirror, it looks beautiful. But it was bad.
Yeah, I mean,
where
we grew up was fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, we used to model as kids, you know.
You did?
Yeah, for Ford
it's
modeling
great.
Agency. But we were in the city every day.
That's great.
But I just thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I didn't see the real dark side of it.
Right. I mean,
I remember Bernie Getz, and I remember, like, the city falling apart. And I've seen the documentary about the Bronx, and I know.
Sure, yeah.
But you could, you could avoid it.
You could avoid it to a certain extent, but you couldn't avoid it. Like, if you moved here to be an actress, like, if she moved here in 1981, like, when I was bartending in the city, I knew a lot of the waitresses, and it was tough. It was tough. A lot of shit happened that was very bad, and people just kind of sucked it up because it was such a brutal town, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was bad, but it was, I remember stories, I'd be like, Jesus Christ. I mean, a lot of stories, or I wouldn't bring it up. It was just a couple of people, but it was a given, almost.
Yeah. But it's just the way all the cities, big cities that have attracted workers, they've all changed back to these
a little bit
exclusive
yeah.
places.
Not all of them, but they've
no,
I mean,
but the New York, San Francisco, London, Sydney, Melbourne, like these cities all over the world,
right,
where
right.
you know, I guess like the creatives and the
right.
money people are attracted to,
yeah.
That there was a demographic move back into the city. Move out
yeah.
and then back.
That's right. I remember in the early 90s when I started seeing downtowns getting developed, wherever I'd be on the road, like even, you know,
Charlotte.
Oh, yeah,
you'd be out doing the gigs.
And you're like, oh, look, they're trying to build downtown just like New York, like Soho, you know. I don't know how they ended up, but...
But I think a lot of them have been successful.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think
Philly,
so, too.
Philly has been gentrified.
Yeah.
People moved back in.
Yeah. But in L.A., everybody moved to that bum section downtown.
Dublin's the same. Dublin's gotten unaffordable. Like,
really?
like the destination cities, Berlin.
Wow.
They talk about the cost of living. Like, that's like a... See, people always say, oh, is it Giuliani? You know, Giuliani cleaned up the city. It's like, well, did he clean up London? Because it's fucking London's had
right,
the same experience.
Right.
I think it's more demographics than anything else.
Yeah, no, but Giuliani did do something. I was here for that, believe
yeah.
me. People don't want to give... Like, they're trying to rewrite history. The crime rate dropped. I know it was dropping everywhere. But it dropped in New York. It changed.
Yeah.
Some of it you don't like Times Square, like I said, there's always that, oh, I love Taxi Driver, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when I lived in it, I loved it because it was thrilling, but it was no place. It was not civilized. It was
no.
just, it was, It was anarchy, you know, Times Square. It was anarchy.
Yeah.
It was bad.
I mean, I do remember that. I remember the end of Times
Square. Yes. It was bad. People would leave plays and run home. I mean, it was bad.
I mean, when I first stopped drinking was at the end of that, 1995.
Right, right.
And when I first stopped drinking, I started to look for my kicks elsewhere.
Of course.
I used to wander around Times Square, but it was very much the very, very end.
The booths. Yeah, the end of the booths. I know. I was right there.
Yeah, were you living there at that time?
I was right there. I was living in, it's down in the village.
Oh, you were in the village.
But I mean, I would go to the booths, and then, it was crazy.
You look for your kids.
Yeah, they were a big addiction, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Des.
I know you hate podcasts.
I do, but I enjoyed this.
Well, this is just like a conversation with a mic in your mouth.
Yes, it was. It was great.
And so you don't do... Oh, you do Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
You have a weird Twitter persona.
Yes.
What is that?
It's kind of a...
It's funny. I enjoy it, but it's aggressive...
It a soccer mom, maybe. It's a very, you know...
It's like the angry Colin Quinn.
It's angry sometimes, but it's also like, you know, very... tedious and boring, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did a couple of today about Irish jokes I was going to do in Ireland, and you know.
Oh, really? You started talking about Ireland?
Yeah.
So, what is your Twitter?
I am Colin Quinn.
At I am Colin Quinn.
Yeah.
Go see Colin at the Vodafone
Comedy
Carnival.
See me at the tent.
And remember that he's proper Irish pedigree.
And remember, this is only the beginning. If you think you're getting rid of me, if you think this is me doing three shows and it's like, okay, I went to Ireland, I did comedy, that's sadly mistaken. I'm not one to leave. I'm like, what's her name? Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction.
Oh, right. So this is the beginning of a Fatal Attraction?
I will not be ignored.
Well, they look forward to being stalked by you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Colin.
Thanks, Des.
That was great, man. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to Colin for taking part, and I hope that people will go see Colin and everyone else at the Vodafone Comedy Festival, which starts tonight in Dublin. And I hope you guys get good weather. I didn't check the forecast. Good weather here in West Hampton Beach, Long Island, which is where I am residing for the summer, and doing a lot of driving in and out to the city, but I think it's worth it, the extra bit of driving for waking up on the beach. And that is not to say that I don't miss you guys over there in Ireland. And I'm aware that there are some people not in Ireland that are listening to this, but I think it's predominantly Irish people. So I miss you guys. And I will be back at the end of September doing two shows at the Dríocht in Blanchardstown, recording a special, which will be the best of the last 2 years of stand-up that I've been doing, and I think it's going to be a good one. I think it's going to be a strong one. Because the majority of this material has been performed all over the world. It has been well tried and tested. So I'm not sure when tickets are going on sale for that, but it's a cheap ticket, only 15 euros. And I mean, I know often stand-up tapings are free, but this is completely self-financed. So there is a charge for the tickets, but it will be a great show. And I think it's definitely worth 15 euros. So I will keep you updated when those tickets go on sale. I got nobody else recorded, but I got to keep it going, guys. And I really am thankful to everybody who sent me messages and said, what's going on with the podcast? I like listening to podcasts when I'm jogging. You know, people like, you know, I've been ill lately and the podcast gets me through an hour. So thank you to all those people who kept me under pressure. You know, I'm not married, and so I require anonymous people to nag me to get me to do things in the absence of a live-in nagger. Now that sounds a bit negative, and I'm kidding, but I am a procrastinator, so I need people to poke me from time to time to get things done. Otherwise I will just leave them be, and I need deadlines, and because the podcast is just me, I don't have deadlines, and because nobody's ever offered to sponsor us, by the way, so I don't even have a financial obligation to put the podcast up, but that's fine. I'm not complaining. So anyway, I guess that's it, really, you know. We'll chat to you soon. I'm in New York, so it's New York-based comedians that I'll be interviewing. So if anybody has any suggestions, and there's no need to suggest Louis C.K., Chris Rock, you know, Kevin Hart, I'm not going to be getting, like, the massive comedians. I'm not dealing with the hassle of that anyway. So, but if you're down with the comedy scene or you listen to other podcasts and there's people you like listening to, you know, guys like Mark and accessible guys, don't be afraid to send me some suggestions, because I'm not aware of who Irish people are familiar with over here. So yes, that's it. Yes, we'll chat soon. I miss you guys. Peace.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.